weeping into his arms, bury her head in his strong shoulder, get him to make everything all right, the same way he looked after those damn sheep of his. Instead, she tried to pull herself together.
No, she said. No, nothing like that.
She followed his arm as he put the gun down, still slightly shocked that he had had it there.
It's Nirek, she stuttered, dissolving into tears again.
Lennox's face changed utterly. It closed up, like a door slamming shut. His arms slowly lowered to his sides. Oh, he said, good old stuff. He turned to go, and Nina wanted to throw something at his head.
No, she said, you don't understand. He's in trouble.
For stopping his train where he shouldn't, said Lennox. Good.
But he's lost his job. He's being deported. They're sending him home.
Lennox turned back and looked at her calmly. Maybe sometimes it's time to go home, he said. Nina could only stare at him. She couldn't think of anything else to do.
Oh, she said.
Lennox gazed at his feet. I didn't mean that, he said finally and with effort. I'm sorry to hear about your boyfriend.
He's not my boyfriend, said Nina. He's just a man, okay? In trouble for being friends with me. He made a mistake, and so did I, and we didn't even do anything. Not that it's any of your business. And now he's being sent out of the country. Forgive me for thinking you'd give a shit about anything that isn't a frickin' sheep.
She turned away to go towards the barn. Wait, said Lennox, still sounding annoyed. What did you think I could do?
I thought you might know a lawyer, said Nina sullenly. But forget it. It doesn't matter. You don't care.
He moved forward. I only know a Scottish divorce lawyer, he said. I'm not sure how much use he'd be.
Don't worry about it, said Nina bitterly. Sorry to trouble you.
It took days, but an email finally came from Jim. Marek had gone, flown out on a deportee's flight with goodness knows how many other unlucky refugees and travellers. Nina sat up long into the night when she got the message, cursing the name she had given her bookshop, wondering whether, in real life, anyone actually got a happy ever after.
Chapter 30 The clouds were scudding against a bright sun. Now that they were past the very peak of midsummer, there was pink once more in the sky, the promise of a proper, protracted sunset, rather than a simple fade. Nina was waiting for the axe to fall, for Lennox to lose his farm, the mean old git, and for her to be evicted. It was just a matter of time. And the stupid thing was, even with everything that had happened, up here in the peace and the wilds of the great valleys and deep lochs of Scotland, she had found something that suited her, that soothed her soul. A peace and quiet, a feel for the landscape that she'd never known before, for gentle husbanding and wild creatures, and a sense that things didn't have to change, that skyscrapers didn't have to be thrown up in minutes for foreign investors, that seasons would come and go with the clouds passing across the sky, but also that everything would come around again, and find itself much as it had been generations ago, in the farms and the rivers and the towering cliffs and the gentle running valleys, where life did not move so fast that there wasn't time to settle down with a cup of tea and a piece of shortbread and a book. It was horribly difficult, she reflected, to have finally found the place you thought of as home, only to realize you were going to have to move on again. Maybe she'd be just as happy in Orkney. She'd heard it was incredibly beautiful there, fish leaping from the sea straight to your plate, skies as big as the world, and people thirsty for books. But every day she followed the familiar road winding down into the valley of Kirinfeef, and found her heart was missing it before she'd even left. The sun was lying heavy and full, casting rays down the little valley. The cobbles looked warm, the town square was filled with tourists and people flocking around. Edwin and Hugh were outside the pub, as usual, no doubt commenting on the world and everything in it. Leslie was putting fruit out outside the shop, and waved a cheerful hand to see the book bus back again, as did other locals as they saw her drive past, used to her in their midst. Carmen, the headmistress, honked the horn of her Minnie. Nina felt almost tearful at their welcome. A group of boys were playing shinty in the near field. She was surprised beyond belief to notice that Ben was amongst them. She carried on past the dangling purple bells of the foxgloves that lined the roadway at this time of year, and on upwards to the farm. The sheep were turned out in the lower meadow, the cows in the upper, and the lambs that had been left to grow were almost big enough now as to be indistinguishable from the sheep. Half-smiling, Nina recognised little Fluffy, always the runt, with his jagged scar, still lagging behind the rest, completely unable to grow up, trotting around behind Parsley when he could find him. It did her heart good to see him. No sign of Lennox or Parsley today, though. She was so used to seeing them striding the sides of the hills, two little blobs, one tall and intent, one bounding in a flash, that she could generally spot them from miles away. Not today. She felt nervous. She was going to have to see him at some point and try not to get angry with him, and wait, of course, for her eviction notice, and move on. Professionally, she had achieved more than she'd ever dreamed possible. Personally, she'd made a hash of it. She thought back to the good advice Sarinda had given her before she'd left. No, it hadn't gone right. Things didn't always. But at least she'd put herself out there, at least she'd tried and given it a shot. As Sarinda kept saying, everyone's love life went badly until the end. That was just how it was. And now she'd learned a little, and she'd know what to do if she met any more puppy-dog-eyed men, or at least she'd find out their status before she started flirting with them or sending them poetry. And if she met another grumpy farmer, well, she'd know to run a mile and not let herself get sucked into thinking about the touch of a hand, a strong, masculine body pressing against hers. In the midst of her reverie, she was startled to realise that Lennox and Parsley were standing right in front of her.
"Dreaming about books," said Lennox.
Nina looked around the farmyard. It was suddenly full of farmhands armed with tools and shovels. "What's up?" she said.
"Thought you'd like to come," grunted Lennox. "We're off to the Clarks."
"Where?" Lennox sighed and turned round to the boys.
"Sorry, I told you she was a bit glacket."
"I'm not whatever that is you just said," said Nina defiantly.
"Those kids, Ainsley and Ben," said Lennox. "I thought you said they needed help."
Mrs. Clark was overjoyed to see them, completely overwhelmed. Nina and Ainsley took down the dirty curtains and stuffed them in the washing machine, while Lennox directed his men, who fixed the broken doors and replaced the glass in the windows. Two of them even started painting the sitting room, whilst someone else went up on the roof to replace all the loose tiles. It was absolutely astounding how much a band of people could get done with a will when they set their minds to it. Nina tried to thank Lennox, who looked at her completely dumbfounded that she would even consider it something worthy of thanks. It needed doing, that was all. Ben ran about in a fit of delight, trying to help the gardeners and plasterers in turn as they fixed up the tumble-down house, as well as mainlining biscuits and turning Radio 1 up far louder than his mother could normally bear it. The sun beat down. It was incredibly hot, as they worked through the day, barely taking breaks. Nina glanced over from time to time. It was so hot, Lennox had taken off his shirt and was splitting kindling for the winter on an old log.
"Why have you stopped?" asked Ainsley, as they rinsed the nets.
No reason," said Nina.
"Is it that old bloke again?"
said Ainsley.
"Why, I see it is."
"Yeah, all right," said Nina.
They both watched him for a second.
"Okay, let's get on," said Nina.
Pushing into the afternoon, Nina noticed with surprise an older gentleman she'd seen before. He was wearing a suit and tie, and she realised it was Lennox's lawyer. He spoke in a low and intent voice to Lennox, who had put the axe down. Lennox's face turned absolutely miserably cross, and he appeared to be swearing under his breath. The lawyer looked apologetic and turned to go. As he did so, he glanced up and caught sight of Nina through the window. He held up a hand and popped in through the new kitchen door.
"Ah, hello," he said.
"Hello,"
said Nina, fearing the worst.
"I just wanted to see. I was sorry to hear about your friend. I did speak to the Home Office, you know, But apparently it was voluntary, so there was nothing they could do.
You called the Home Office about Marek?
Oh, yes. Lennox asked if I wouldn't mind. Nina didn't hear any more. She was staring out of the kitchen window. The lawyer took his leave, but she hardly noticed him go. Lennox had hired Mrs. Garsters from the village for when they all trooped back up to the farm, exhausted at the end of the afternoon. Mrs. Garsters loved books about beetles and was practically an expert. Nina had to repeatedly apologize for her failure to source the most up-to-date British Journal of Entomology. She would huff and puff and ask what kind of a service she was, and Nina had to explain that she wasn't a service, she was a business, which didn't seem to placate her in the least. Set out on long tables in the courtyard were thick slabs of ham, with piccalilli and mustard on the side, fresh homemade bread cut roughly with salty local butter, sweating wheels of white and blue cheese, creamy potato salad, and a cool cucumber and green cabbage salad with fennel, orange and oats, which looked utterly delicious, followed by huge apple pies and warm, frothing cream from the dairy. Nina couldn't remember the last time she'd felt so hungry, but her hands were sore and cracked from all the bleach she'd been using, and before she ate, she nipped into the barn just behind her own conversion. She was sure she'd seen Lennox leave some lanolin there. He used it for softening his own hands and for the sheep's udders, and it was just, she felt, what she needed. She rubbed the lanolin in, and was just refilling her bottle with water from the cold standpipe that fed directly from the well, when she saw him. She couldn't actually see him at all, to begin with. He was silhouetted against the sunlight pouring in from outside the barn, nothing but a tall shape. He could have been anyone. But he wasn't just anyone. And in a millisecond, everything changed. She could leave it all behind. She could. She had before. She could do anything she wanted, like the travelling people, like everyone who moved around in the world. But she wanted to experience everything she could. She wasn't going to hide any longer. She had started with a van, but somehow it had opened her up to so much more. And now she wanted that real life that she felt she had been missing out on, that she felt other people got a shot at while she sat quietly in a corner being nice. She pressed herself against the wall of the barn, feeling the warmth of the ancient stone on her back. The sweet smell of freshly gathered hay was thick in the air, golden strands breaking off and drifting down from the loft above. Lennox's shirt was half unbuttoned in the tumultuous heat. His chest was hairless. Nina blinked and realized she'd been wondering about it for weeks, thinking about it, dreaming about it. But she hadn't been able to admit it to herself, couldn't admit it to anyone, was scared that it was just her imagination running away with her again, a foolish fantasy about a man she barely knew. But all she knew now, the one thing taking over her brain completely, was that she wanted, needed to touch him, and soon, and that there was no one here to judge her or be patronizing to quiet little bookish Nina. "Do you want a drink of water?" she found herself saying, and her voice was breathless and lower than usual. Lennox advanced into the barn, and she held out the bottle of water, condensation running down the outside, and looked straight at him. She tried to smile, but she couldn't. She couldn't move. His eyes gave nothing away as he advanced towards her, close enough that she could feel the heat of his body, smell the fresh, clean sweat. It made her dizzy. She swallowed hard. He took the bottle without a thank you, and drank from it without taking his gaze off her. There was a split second to decide, she knew. The tiniest split second in which she could take the bottle, turn away, remove herself. Instead, she did something she wouldn't have known she was capable of. She pressed herself, defiantly, even further up against the wall, and stared brazenly right back at him. Her heart was pounding, and she couldn't trust herself to speak. She needed the wall to brace herself in case her legs gave way. She looked at his outline against the brightness of the day in the cool, quiet sanctuary of the barn, and realized she'd never wanted anything or anyone more in her life. And to hell with everything else, Kate,
Marek, the consequences, what might happen next. She held his gaze in a single, timeless, endless moment, an instant trembling in the heat, as though the world had pressed pause, as though she were a shy ballerina waiting to take the stage. Then Lennox took a brief step backwards and pushed the barn door closed behind him with a loud bang. What happened next was so quick it took her totally by surprise, even though she had decided, had clearly and deliberately chosen to be provocative, was thinking of nothing but the fact that this was what she wanted. But even with that, the speed and ferocity of his kiss was overwhelming. He kissed her skillfully, but hard, insistently, as if there was some biding fury in him that he had to work very, very hard to control. It was by a vast margin the best kiss Nina had ever had. She kissed him back, furiously, realizing that up to this point in her life, kisses had always been a prelude, a tease, or an exploration, a precursor to what might or might not happen next. This was not the case here. This kiss was several steps down the line from that. This was serious and purposeful. It was the real thing, and Nina felt the thrill go through her down to the bones. And when they stopped, momentarily, with a huge rush of disappointment on her part, she felt sure he would apologize, like the gentleman she knew him to be, step back. Everything she knew about Lennox and his taciturn ways made her think that what came next would require discussion, negotiation, embarrassment possibly, dinner probably, and her heart sank. Instead, she simply whispered in his ear, "More." "Oh, God," she heard him groan, and he pulled back, breathing heavily, looking at her. Outside there was noise. "I have to. I have to see to the workers." Nina nodded, still staring at him. "Later," he said shortly, and she wondered why, all along, she had bothered about how little he spoke to her. It didn't feel to her like they needed words at all. Chapter 31. The high tea was agony, or rather, in other circumstances, it would have been entirely marvellous. The early sunset went down slowly in a bright blaze of pink and gold, and many of the farmhands' wives turned up with extra plates of food to share, great shining pies and sides of ham, as the hungry men and women came in from all around for the party. Huge jugs of cider were filled to the brim and emptied equally quickly. Hunks of thick, homemade bread with farm butter and local cheese were consumed on the side. Ben and large numbers of other local children ran in and out of the house, chasing the farm cat, who was unimpressed, giving food to Parsley, who was delighted, and stealing nips of cider. Someone had brought a fiddle, and couples danced up and down the courtyard. Songs were sung and jokes were made. Nina and Lennox simply stared at each other, utterly oblivious to everything around them, clumsy and unfocused. Nina felt sure everyone could guess exactly what was going through her mind. She found herself blushing at regular intervals, utterly unable to concentrate, always aware of where he was standing and which way he was facing, and how long she would have to wait until the instant they managed to steal themselves away. At last, the dishes started to be cleared away, and by mutual agreement, as soon as was even vaguely polite, they left the revellers and headed to her barn, with its windows facing away from the farmhouse and other prying eyes. Nina wondered briefly if the sight of the flouncy curtains, the expensive kitchen, the immaculate Scandinavian bed, might not make Lennox broody and sad, but still, he said nothing. The second they were inside, he grabbed her again and kissed her, breathless. Then he led her upstairs and took off her clothes, quickly, expertly, and when they were both naked, he laid her down on the bed. "You?" she said in surprise, staring at him. "It's you." He held her gaze and looked back at her, his hands caressing her body. "I think it is," he said wonderingly, almost as surprised as she was. I didn't mean this to happen. I can't stop thinking about you. Everything about you." He held off, his hands either side of her face.
The look you get when you're reading in your van, and your feet are up, and you sit so still, and your face is alight, and I don't know where you are. You could be anywhere, so far away, off in a part of your mind I'll never get to. It drives me crazy. The way you just came here, just got up, changed your entire life. I mean, my family's been here for 4 generations. It would never have occurred to me to do what you did, just to start over and do something different. Amazing. You're such a tiny thing. You'd never think you had it in you. And that train driver, that drove me crazy. I'm sorry. I was jealous. Nina's heart felt like it would burst.
I couldn't let myself. I couldn't handle another stupid crush. Another waste of everything that didn't go anywhere and just left me feeling stupid. And you did treat me like an idiot.
Because I am an idiot. Nina closed her eyes.
Kiss me, please. Right now. Hard, the way you do.
His face darkened. Kate, he said. Nina winced. Kate, she didn't like how I was in bed. Said I was too rough. His face took on an uncharacteristically vulnerable cast. Nina looked at him, her eyes misting over slightly as she felt a slight cracking in him.
Everyone is different, she said, softly but clearly. Everyone is different in what they like, which is okay. And what I like, I think, is you. Very much.
You don't look the type, he muttered, plainly embarrassed.
You can't tell anything about anyone just by looking at them, said Nina pertly, and stuck her tongue out, which finally elicited a smile from him.
No, he said. I suppose you can't. Can we stop talking now? And they did. Afterwards, there was no laughing or joking or small talk. They simply leaned against each other. Out of breath, his head collapsed on the side of her neck, the bristles against her soft skin. A little overwhelmed, almost scared by what they had done. Nina's heart still beating fast, the tension relieved momentarily, but even now building up again, her chest stained a deep red. That had been something else altogether. A surprise, something inside herself she didn't even know was there.
Can I stay? He whispered finally. Yes, said Nina abruptly. And she didn't say thank you, and she didn't say please, because this was a very different Nina, in a very different space. And she didn't know how long it would last.
His face, she realized as he tumbled into sleep for a brief interlude, did not relax in slumber as most people's did. She couldn't look at him and admire the prettiness, or the boy he once was, or see a deeper softness beyond his harsh interior, like one could imagine doing with a lover. No, this was what he was. The steely jaw. The look of utter concentration, whether on the farm or on her. She stared at him in fascination, until he woke up, without a second of confusion, and pulled on her wrists.
Nina, he said, as if he was starving for her. And he was. He absolutely was.
And as the fiddles and the partying went on late into the night, so did they. Chapter 32 By the fourth day after the party, it was getting ridiculous. They couldn't go on like this. For starters, she was going to end up in hospital, and bankrupt. And secondly, they hadn't spoken at all about what they were actually doing, and that couldn't go on indefinitely. Because she couldn't help herself. She couldn't think of anything or anyone else at all. She couldn't handle money. She couldn't be trusted to work. She recommended nothing but Anne Nin, which raised the minister's wife's eyebrows, although she notably didn't return it. There wasn't a time of day when he wasn't either working or coming back to find her, wherever she was, which once involved him walking into the Women's Institute book swap and telling Nina with a completely straight face
that his Land Rover required a tow from the van and could she come at once. Nina assumed, given the sensibleness of the nice ladies discussing Second World War novels, that they all thought this was perfectly normal, and didn't notice for a second the raised eyebrows and titters as she left, and he drove her the shortest distance possible out of town, where they couldn't be seen, and took her roughly, and without preliminaries, behind a tree, and she yelled so hard she thought she might die. Nina found it extraordinary. For a man so closed up in himself, so uncommunicative, he was wildly inventive and varied as a lover, and extraordinarily passionate. It was as if everything he couldn't say, he could express in other ways. This was how she was getting to know him, getting to the heart of him. Not through long chats or fancy poetry or shared interests, but through the physicality of him. The same way he worked at one with animals or the landscape, and never felt the need to question why. He was simply a part of the earth. And so was this. And she was falling in love with him, she realized anxiously, day by day. She was learning to speak his language, and she couldn't help it, or help herself. She was delirious with it, heady, desperate for him in a way that made her feel utterly vulnerable. And she knew that if he didn't feel the same way, she wouldn't be able to bear it. "We're so different," she said down the phone. "Honestly, it's... I don't know. It might just be sex." "Oh, my God, that's everything," breathed Sarinda. "Tell me more." "I don't want to tell you more," said Nina. "Firstly, you're disgusting, and secondly, it'll just make me miss it and go over there, and if I don't get some sleep, I'm going to crash the van." "I thought he'd be like that as soon as I saw him," said Sarinda. "You didn't. I totally did. He's the type. I could just tell. All buttoned up and devastatingly sexy underneath. All that repressed emotion." "Stop it," said Nina. "I can't bear it. I have absolutely no idea what he feels, and it's driving me bananas." "Oh, sweetie," said Sarinda, contrite. "I'm sorry. I didn't realize you'd really fallen for him." "I haven't," said Nina, panicking. "I haven't. I can't. I won't." "Right. That's why you sound completely normal and unfussed when you talk about him. Come on. Did you feel like this about Marek?" "No," said Nina, "but I didn't sleep with Marek." "Do you think it would have been like this?" Nina paused before she spoke. "Nothing has ever been remotely like this." "Well, then, we haven't even discussed his ex. He's probably still in love with her. We haven't discussed anything." "Are you absolutely 100% sure you're not overthinking this?" "I might be homeless soon," said Nina, looking around the lovely little barn, tears plopping onto the expensive sheets. "Kate's probably awesome. I'm probably just a local distraction. Convenient, that's all. Maybe I've just rushed stuff." "It's not your fault. If he's a dick, you need to deal with that. If he's a nice guy going through a hard time, well, maybe he's worth hanging on for." "I think he's ruined me," said Nina in a small voice. She expected Sarinda to tell her to stop being so melodramatic, but she didn't. Chapter 33 "Do you want to go for a walk?" Lennox looked at her strangely. "A what?" It was 5:30 on a clear, blowy Sunday morning. Lennox was getting dressed. Nina was lying exhausted, happily weary, in bed. "A walk, you know. Enjoy nature in the countryside?" He blinked. "By walking up and down it?" "Uh-huh. But that's what I do all day." Nina sat up. "Well, let me come. It'll be, like, an outing." Lennox frowned. They hadn't, Nina was more than aware, been anywhere. Not to the pub, not to the bakery to get delicious sausage rolls, and sit outside kicking their heels against the wall like the teenagers did, pastry flaking down for parsley to grab. They hadn't jumped in the Land Rover and gone for a romantic picnic, or walked hand in hand along the beach. She looked at Lennox shrugging into a clean twill shirt. It had to be, she had figured out, several degrees below freezing before he added a jacket. At the door, he leaned down to lace himself into his heavy work boots. He poured coffee from the pot on the stove into an insulated cup. He'd eat breakfast later. Nina watched him as he prepared to leave in silence.
"Not coming, then?"
he grunted eventually. Nina leapt up.
"Yes,"
she said, piling her clothes on enthusiastically. She grabbed her coat from the peg and chased him outside. Dawn was breaking, and it was bitterly cold outside. Parsley galloped cheerfully out of his kennel, and Nina made a big fuss of him. Lennox disappeared back inside, and reappeared with a second cup of hot, sweet black coffee that he passed to her wordlessly. The waking birds chirruped in the hedgerows as they passed by. Early morning mist hovered over the fields. Wrapped up snugly, with a steaming coffee cup warming her hands, Nina scampered to keep up with Lennox's long strides as he marched ahead, popping his head into the cow's barn to make sure milking was going ahead properly. Rory nodded quickly when he saw him, then on up to the high fields to check on the sheep's grass and feed. The sun was rising pink in the mist over the far hills, and Nina gasped to see it. But Lennox was simply moving on through his morning, checking that one of the stone walls wasn't crumbling too much, examining a fence for deer damage. As he did so, Nina saw, a few meters away, a fawn, brown-spotted, its head lifting and nose twitching in excitement. It gazed at her for a second, its huge brown eyes luminous, then turned and bounded away.
"Whoa!" she said. "Did you see that?"
"A deer," said Lennox incredulously. "Can he get rid of the buggers?"
"But did you see how lovely it was?"
"Bloody protected species," said Lennox.
"You have no romantic soul,"
said Nina, rather despairingly, watching as he carefully fixed a tiny hole in the fence with a spare piece of wire and some pliers he'd pulled out of a Swiss Army knife in his pocket. He looked at her, and she realized she'd made a mistake, that she might not have been the first person to say that to him.
"Hmm," he said.
"I don't mean that," said Nina. "I just thought the deer was beautiful."
Lennox crossly extended his arm.
"You know, the trees, from here all the way up to Sutherland, they're centuries old. Go back to Mary Queen of Scots, and even earlier. And they used to house grouse and hedgehogs and golden eagles and millions of midges and bugs. But oh no, the deer were the prettiest. Everyone watched the film and thought deer were cute, and they were the ones that had to stay. So, now they overrun everything. They eat the tree roots, and they eat the seeds, and they eat pretty much everything, which means there are fewer and fewer of those ancient forests left, because the deer destroy all the ancient habitats. So, there are no robins, and no cuckoos, and no adders, and no woodlice. But they're not as pretty as Bambi, right?"
Nina looked at him. "I didn't realize," she said.
"Didn't read it in one of those books of yours."
They headed back to the farm in silence, Nina desperately worried.
"I'm sorry,"
she said, back at the farmyard gates.
"What about?" he said.
"Saying you weren't romantic."
"Oh," he said. "I'm not. You coming in?"
"Yes," Nina said. "Yes, I want to. Can we talk?"
Lennox sighed as she followed him into the pretty sitting room.
"You wouldn't rather."
"What don't you want to talk about?" said Nina. Is it your ex?"
Lennox looked weary.
"Nina, must we have this conversation?"
Nina looked at him for a long time. Then she shook her head.
"Obviously not," she said. "Sorry. I thought this meant something, but clearly it doesn't. When you still can't even say if I'm going to get my marching orders any minute."
She stood up to leave.
"Oh, Lord, Nina, I'm not even a single man yet. You must know it's out of my hands."
"So this isn't anything to you?"
"Fine."
He looked at her, shaking his head in amazement that she would even talk like this.
"Me neither,"
said Nina, regretting the words before they were out of her mouth. There was a very long pause. Lennox stood up slowly, went to the door, and put his boots back on.
Don't go,
said Nina, looking at his broad back in consternation. If there was one thing she knew about him, one tiny thing he'd let slip about himself, it was how vulnerable he'd been after Kate had left him. And what had she done but go straight for the heart of that vulnerability, take what he had offered her and reject it for not being enough, just like Kate had done?
I didn't mean anything. I didn't.
I know, said Lennox gruffly. It's all about the house. But really, you want the hearts and flowers and everything like that. That's what you think is important.
It isn't. I don't think like that at all.
She looked at him.
Will you... Do you want to come round and eat later?
Rory and I will probably eat at Alistair's, he said, not catching her eye.
She watched him go, and something rose in her, something that threatened to overwhelm her. A flood of emotion and pain. As he ducked through the doorway, she said his name briefly. His first name. She hadn't even known it until he'd told her.
John,
she said, quietly. But although he stiffened for a second, he did not turn back.
You're an idiot. Shut up. I know. He is too, though.
You were one first.
Why did you have to push? Maybe it's better I know now that he's a sullen bastard.
Oh, for God's sake, you knew he was like that anyway. Neans, you wouldn't know the real thing if it came up and spat in your face.
I wouldn't put that past him either.
Nina, wake up! Yelled Sarinda, whom she'd woken up.
It's not about frickin' romantic picnics and moonlit walks and storybook stuff. This is real life. Yes, he's difficult and grouchy. He's going through a divorce. He's also sexy, solvent, and nice. And until about half an hour ago, he seemed very into you. Oh, God. I'm coming up. You can't possibly have any more annual leave.
Hmm, said Sarinda.
What?
Nothing, said Sarinda. They owe me, that's all.
Don't come up. What could you do by being here? Hang out? Buy ice cream to cheer you up? Smack you on the head and tell you to stop being such an idiot? Maybe he'll come over, said Nina, hopefully.
He doesn't seem the type to beg forgiveness, said Sarinda. And Sarinda was right.
Chapter 34
Nina found herself up on her tiptoes late at night, peeking through the kitchen window to see, just to see, if his light was on. They'd barely crossed paths. It seemed crazy that they could have spent the last 3 weeks utterly naked with one another, completely open, vulnerable, and as close to each other as two people could possibly be. And now they were supposed to pass each other on the street and not mention a thing about it. It was completely nuts. Now that Nina had the chance to think about it, she could have beaten herself up for pushing so hard, so soon. And she wanted him so badly. She missed him desperately. Not just, she realized, the sex, although she missed that like crazy. It was as if she'd never eaten chocolate in her life. Then she'd got a taste, and now wanted to eat it all the time. Everything before this, she realized, had been mere fumbles. Nice, nervous, gentle, pleasant. They had been black and white, and this had been colour. Sex so intense she'd had headaches, or on one occasion burst out crying, and Lennox, not saying anything, had simply held her tight against his chest and wiped away her tears as they fell, had comforted her more than anything ever could, even if she hadn't quite known why she was crying in the first place. Oh, Lord, she missed him. She missed the half-dozen eggs placed on her doorstep from time to time, the home-brewed cider they had drunk in the kitchen. She missed parsley sniffing around to welcome her home. More often than not now, he was out in the high fields with his master, and on the rare occasions he was at the farmhouse, he was so tuckered out he couldn't do much more than cock an eye at the van when she came home. She missed that odd feeling she got with Lennox, that whatever happened, whether it was to a lamb, a dog, or herself, he would make it all right. He would sort it out. He made her feel more secure than she could ever have imagined. She had one more look out of the little window, and was just about to draw the curtain and turn away, when she caught, for a tiny instant, a reflection in the window across the way, and realized that he was looking at her, too. The breath caught in her throat, and she stared at him, frozen on her tiptoes. just gazing, feeling a longing, a desperate wanting that threatened to overwhelm all thoughts of sense or reasonableness, that made her want to run across the courtyard. Something clattered suddenly, and glancing down, she realized that she had knocked a plate into the sink, startling herself. When she looked back, he had gone, and she still didn't know how long she had left. It was hard, she thought, this self-realization business. She could barely read a word, and that was the final straw. He could take away her sex life, he could take away her peace of mind, her hopes for happiness, her home, her livelihood. But nobody was taking away her reading. She should leave, she thought boldly. She should go to Orkney, start over. She'd done it once, she could do it again. Start from the beginning, away from this whole town, away from the gossip and the prying eyes and the sheer hardship of being in such proximity to someone who had made her feel so much. She told herself she absolutely was going to go, that it wasn't a case of throwing down her last card, leaving forever, in the hope that it would force him to see sense, beg her not to go, make everything all right. She was going to stand up for herself. Again. She threw on a dress it wasn't quite warm enough to wear, applied some lipstick with a trembling hand, and trying to fake a confidence she didn't feel, flung open her front door. He was standing there, his huge hands on the doorframe. She jumped.
Oh!
Nina, he said, and his face was drawn.
I can't do without you. I can't. I'm sorry. Please. I know I'm difficult. I know I am. Give me another chance. I just want another chance. Please.
He didn't need to say another word. Nina grabbed him tightly and went to pull him to her, knowing that whatever was happening, she couldn't let him go, couldn't get him out of her system. He was in there, whether she wanted him to be or not, and she no longer had the slightest choice. She crushed her body to his, and he held her so tightly it nearly knocked the breath out of her. Her heart was pounding, and suddenly something in her crashed down. Something she hadn't seen coming, something for once that wasn't comparable to anything she'd read in a book or dreamed or fantasized about. He moved towards her achingly slowly, and she stretched up to him with longing, prolonging the delicious second before she could feel him, taste him once more. And he smiled at her, knowing exactly what she was feeling and exactly what it meant. Then, all of a sudden, he jerked back, and she heard it too, tire tracks on the farm road. She smiled ruefully, assuming it was a feed supplier or the vet, but he shook his head. He obviously recognized the sound of the car. He stepped back, his face distraught. "Oh, Nina, I'm sorry," he said, although she didn't realize what he meant straight away. "I am so sorry." And into the courtyard, scattering chickens as it went, came a white Range Rover Evoque, skidding to an ungainly stop. Chapter 35. Nina watched from the shadows of the barn as the woman emerged. She was, amazingly, pretty much exactly how Nina had thought she would be. Blonde, with curly hair, slightly boho in style. Gorgeous, in fact. She didn't look like she fitted with Lennox at all, although when they were standing together, Nina could suddenly see it. His height and his lean, broad-shouldered physique showing off Kate's sleek curves very well. They made an attractive contrast. Nina stiffened as Kate kissed him on both cheeks. She didn't know what to do. Hiding seemed ridiculous. Should she march out and demand to be introduced as Lennox's girlfriend? That was even worse. It wasn't at all what she was, and it felt like the most ridiculous word to describe what they were going through. A silly, childish term that came nowhere near describing what she felt when he was near her. Like sunshine and a storm all at once, tearing through her. She swallowed, feeling her heart race. Then Kate was marching towards her, smiling, showing very nice teeth. Nina felt incredibly awkward. In another life, in another world, she liked this woman, although she was nothing like her. Now all she could see was what she lacked next to her, not just the carefully mismatched style or the barely there makeup, which even Nina knew took every bit as much effort as the more obvious look. No, it was the sense of shared history. Kate and Lennox striding the streets of Edinburgh together, arm in arm, building a world together, loving each other enough to get married. The idea of Lennox standing up in front of a crowd of people and saying, "I do," made her feel very strange and deeply jealous and wrong-footed.
"Hi,"
said Kate, disarmingly warm, but with calculation behind the greeting. Nina felt sized up, from the provenance of her shoes to her slightly bitten nails, a habit honed over hours of holding a book in one hand.
"Can I come in?"
She tried to remember that this woman was coming to take away what she had undeniably come to think of as her home. The only place she wanted to be, the only job she wanted to do, the only man she had ever wanted, right down to the very bones of her soul. Kate looked around dismissively at the piles of books Nina had managed to accumulate in the immaculate bookshelves, at the scatter cushions she'd bought for the minimalist sofa.
"Like what you've done with it,"
she said, in a tone that seemed to indicate a joke, but obviously meant anything but.
I know I'm not on a long lease or anything,"
said Nina, wondering why she was kowtowing to this person, even if she had the power to ruin her. Kate waved her hand.
"Oh, yes, he never could drive a hard bargain, my husband. Amazed the bloody farm's still standing."
She looked Nina up and down, and Nina flushed, wondering if she knew. And why did she still call him my husband?
"How are you finding Kirrenfief?"
It's been interesting," said Nina, not quite able to find the words to talk about how much everything had changed for her in the short time she'd been there.
"It's a hole, isn't it?" said Kate. "I couldn't believe it. I've never been happier than when I got out. I hear you're off, too."
Did you?" Kate frowned.
"Leslie in the village mentioned you were thinking about the Orkneys. Christ, it sounds even worse than here."
"Where do you live?" said Nina.
"Oh, I'm..."
She didn't finish.
"Let's just say I have plans," she said finally. "Now, let me see what that bloody Lennox is up to."
She turned back to the door of the barn, pausing only to give a critical look to a tatty but adorable rug that Nina had picked up at one of the boot sales she'd worked at.
"Lennox, when the hell are you going to call off your attack dog?"
Lennox was still standing in the farmyard, looking awkward.
"Parsley,"
Kate snorted.
"Not fucking Parsley. That dog would gum a burglar to death. I mean Ranald."
"He's just doing his job," said Lennox.
"By starving me to death,"
said Kate. Lennox closed his eyes briefly.
"Can we discuss this inside?"
Nina took the van down to Pattersmith and gloomily sold not many books. Her mood was obviously showing on her face, and she couldn't concentrate on anything, could barely raise a smile for the children. She wished she'd kidnapped Parsley. At least she'd have someone around her in a good mood. Her imagination ran riot. What were they hammering out? Was Lennox going to give everything up? Maybe he would. Maybe he thought that might be easier. Or right. She couldn't see Kate running a farm somehow. Or maybe... A darker thought intruded into Nina's mind. After all, Kate was so gorgeous. And Lennox, too. And maybe... There must have been an attraction there once. She sighed, and absent-mindedly let a brand-new chart hardback go for the price of a paperback. Innes, the fishman, tried to hide his beam of joy and scurried off at full speed. She had an early supper at the pub with Edwin and Hugh, who were always pleased to see her, but who happened to mention that they'd seen Mrs. Lennox, and had she been up to the farm. Such a lovely lady, so pretty, and Nina couldn't really bear that for much longer. So with a heavy heart, she headed home, bumping the van up the lane. The two of them were out in the farmyard again. Obviously there had been shouting. Parsley was nowhere to be seen. Lennox was standing with his hands outstretched in a gesture of supplication. Kate was red in the face, her beautiful blonde curls bouncing everywhere. Nina didn't feel she could drive through them, so she halted the van and got out.
"What's this?"
Kate was screaming, gesticulating towards the van. "Did you buy it for your fancy woman, who you've installed in my fucking barn?"
"Ah," thought Nina. What was meant to be the calm and organized settling of things had obviously escalated unexpectedly.
"What the hell?" screamed Kate as Nina approached. "Who the hell are you? I thought you were a mouse, a quiet little mouse who doesn't cause any trouble, not someone who moves in on other people's husbands."
Nina stood her ground.
"I thought you were getting a divorce," Kate sniffed.
"Well, he's impossible. You must have seen it. He has absolutely no soul, no poetry. How could you bear it?"
She walked slowly round to the back of the van, snorting as she saw what was written on the side.
"Little shop of happy ever after. Ha, ha, ha. Very fricking funny. There aren't very bloody many of those."
Nina bit her lip. She didn't want to admit that she thought Kate might well be right. Kate moved on, walking through the farmyard as if she owned it. Nina didn't want to ask her whether she actually did. Lennox was standing stock still, watching fearfully.
"So what do you do? Just drive around looking for vulnerable marriages?"
"Stop it, Kate."
Lennox's voice was curt.
"Why? I'm entitled to ask a few questions, aren't I? Though I know you'd much rather I vanished forever and lived in a hole in the ground and never bothered you again."
"Kate, we've been through this." His voice was weary.
"This is my family farm. It's my birthright. It's all you've ever done, blah, blah, blah. Yes, which is why you're such a boring, miserable old bastard who can't take a holiday, or sit through a play, or enjoy a night in a restaurant, or do anything even remotely fun, ever."
"I'm just not that kind of person."
"How would you even know, stuck here all the time? Oh, obviously with company. Seriously, Lennox, you couldn't even be bothered to go half a mile from your own front door. I never had you down as lazy."
"Don't talk about her like that."
Kate rolled her eyes.
"I think that calculating madam can look after herself."
"Enough!"
Lennox strode forward, furious. Kate smiled back. She obviously knew exactly how to push his buttons, Nina thought. She was so beautiful and lovely and talented, so confident. All the attributes Nina longed for, everything she had always envied in others, and yet here she was, screaming and yelling in pained fury. It was truly strange. Kate stepped right up to Nina.
"Let's have a look at your little hobby, shall we? It's all right for her to have a little hobby, I see, Lennox. It was just my daubings you didn't like."
"No," said Lennox. "It's that you wouldn't stick at anything. One day it was ceramics, then it was painting, then it was pottery, then it was interior design. He never followed anything through."
"That's because I didn't have any support at home. You were out all bloody hours, leaving me stranded here."
Lennox looked sad.
"You used to dream of living here," he said quietly.
"Yes, shows what an idiot I was."
Kate opened the door of the van. Nina stood by and let her. She didn't want to get in front of anyone in a mood like this. Kate stepped in and saw the soft, grey walls, the lovely displays, the chandelier. She paused suddenly and turned back, looking inquiringly at Nina.
"Oh," she said. "Oh, this is..."
She ran her hands along the shelves.
"This is lovely."
The way she touched the books, Nina could tell she was a reader. She could always spot them, even the furious ones.
"Oh," she said again, "you run all this yourself?"
"I have some help," shrugged Nina quietly. But Kate had stopped just next to the little cash box. Her mouth had fallen open. Nina peered into the van to see what she was looking at.
"I haven't," Kate started and then stopped again. "I haven't seen that for years."
It was the last, very sticky copy of Up on the Rooftops. Kate's face softened, and suddenly Nina could see the child she must have been. Pretty, petted, spoiled. She reached out a hand.
"May I?" she said.
and Nina nodded.
"This is exactly the edition I had,"
Kate breathed, carefully turning the pages.
"Yes, I was lucky to find them," said Nina. "It's beautiful, isn't it?" "Oh, here's where the pigeon loses his leg, and they make him a new one out of a lolly stick."
Nina smiled.
"Here's the whispering gallery."
"That always terrified me, that bit," Kate nodded.
"God, yes. And Galleon's Reach. Every time I read it, I didn't think they'd make it."
Kate held the book.
Can I?
"That's my last one," said Nina. "I can't part with it. I'm sorry."
"Oh,"
said Kate.
"Oh. I share it with one of my other customers." "But I want it,"
said Kate, pouting prettily. Nina looked at her. She was obviously used to getting what she wanted. Always.
"You can't have it," she said gently. "It belongs to somebody else."
They looked at one another for a long time.
"Oh, God,"
said Kate, sinking into one of the beanbags.
"I am so sick of all this. So sick of it."
Nina nodded.
"I understand. I really do. What's the sticking point?"
Kate sighed.
"My lawyer said to push for the whole farm. Then we'd come to a settlement in the middle."
"Do you really want a farm?"
"Fuck no. What would I do with it? But he just keeps saying, no, you can't have the farm. No discussion. So fricking stubborn."
Nina half smiled.
"Oh, I can see that happening. Doesn't he make you a counteroffer?" "He says he's waiting for one from us, but my lawyer is adamant. And meanwhile, everything will just get swallowed up in costs." "Oh, for goodness sake," said Nina. "Just ask him..."
She suddenly realized what she was about to say. But they had to end this, didn't they?
"Why don't you ask him for the barn? I bet you could sell that or rent it, and then you could live wherever you liked."
Kate frowned.
"But if he said no to that, I really would be losing."
"He wouldn't," protested Nina. Lennox was, it was becoming increasingly clear to her, taciturn, stubborn, bloody-minded, but more than anything, underneath his crusty exterior, he was kind, fundamentally and deeply. She believed that. She liked it more than anything else about him. Kate looked at her.
"Do you think?"
"I think you two need your heads knocked together," Nina thought, but thankfully managed not to say. She went back outside to where Lennox was pacing the yard furiously, partly trying to get his attention to cheer him up, but failing. Lennox looked at her gloomily.
"Do you think I should just give her the farm?" he said.
"I know I can do something else, probably." "Don't be silly. She doesn't want the farm. She was just starting from that standpoint to negotiate."
"That's why Ranald said to play hardball."
"Well, you've been playing stupid ball. Why don't you just offer her the barn?"
Lennox frowned.
"I don't want her living next door."
"She isn't going to live next door, you moron. She'll sell it or rent it as a holiday cottage for loads of money."
Lennox looked at her.
"But where will you go?"
"Can we manage one problem at a time, please?"
Lennox sighed.
"Seriously, you think that might work?"
"Go into the van and sort it out," said Nina. "Now, quickly, before those evil lawyers ruin everything."
Nina sat on top of a low, sun-warmed stone wall in the courtyard. Parsley came over and put his head in her lap.
"I know," she said, stroking his ears. "Me too, Pars. Me too."
Everything inside the van was quiet, and they were in there for a long time. Nina let out a great sigh. What on earth were they doing? Getting back together? Talking about their future? Had Lennox just signed everything over to her the second he saw her? Oh, Lord, it was getting cold, too. Eventually, Lennox emerged, pale-faced. He glanced at Nina and nodded.
"Well," said Nina.
"I said, I hope you don't mind, but I said she could have the barn. I'm so sorry, Nina."
Nina sighed. She left a little space for him to say, So would you like to move into the farmhouse? But of course he didn't. And why would he? They'd only been together a few weeks, and they hadn't even managed to have a conversation about what they were doing. So, of course not. She thought once again of the Orkneys, and felt her throat go dry.